Awesome. So yeah, I just want to welcome everyone, listening on the podcast and also Facebook. This is Myron Golden, and he's a famous speaker. He teaches a lot of entrepreneurs to sell on stage, and he's helped people like Russell Brunson and a lot of other entrepreneurs learn how to do that. And he's also written several books. One of it is From Trash Man to Cash Man, and also, just you're a world-renowned speaker, and you help people sell on stage very high-ticket offers. And so, I kind of want people to get to know more about you, your story. And I know I read on your bio, you said that you had polio as a kid and you had a metal brace on your leg.
Still do, yeah.
Yeah, when whatnot. But you also got a black belt in martial arts. And sure. So that's pretty impressive. So kind of, can you take us back to, who is, Myron, and just your journey into how you became an entrepreneur and what you're doing today?
Yeah, so I was born in Tampa, Florida, where I live now. I was born in Tampa, Florida, in 1961, when segregation was a big thing. And so I was born in a segregated hospital, and the conditions of that hospital were so poor. Segregated basically means there are hospitals where black folks were born and hospitals where white folks were born, and black folks weren't born in the white folks hospital. And now that white folks hospital is just Tampa General Hospital. Anybody can be born there, right? But when I was born, it wasn't that way. And so because the hospital I was born in was underfunded, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, I contracted polio as an infant, like I think it was 7 years after the polio vaccine was discovered. Mm. So pretty fascinating. But a lot of times when like somebody would look at something like that, I was just telling my brother right before he just left a few minutes ago that most people make the mistake of thinking they know what's bad and what's good in their life, right? You can't tell what's bad or good looking through the windshield of your life. You can only tell what's bad or good looking through the rearview mirror, because everything that feels good isn't good and everything that feels bad isn't bad, right? Mm-hmm. So just because something's difficult or challenging doesn't make it bad. Anyway, so I had polio. I walk with a brace on my leg since I've been walking pretty much. I still have a brace on my leg and I use it for walking, but it's just my normal, right? And but when I was a kid, I loved Bruce Lee. Bruce Lee was like my dude, man. I had like Bruce Lee posters all over the wall.
Really?
He was like the baddest dude in town, right? So so I loved martial arts, and I started taking karate when I was probably 15 years old. Mm-hmm. And became a black belt and taught karate for a while. And now I don't really do martial arts anymore. My sport of choice is golf, but they have a lot of similarities. And I became an entrepreneur because I got my first job when I was 14 years old working for other people. And I worked for the city government, and I picked up trash all over town, and I was paid $1.55 an hour. And I liked the idea of having my own money.
Sure.
I didn't like the idea that nobody was willing to pay me what I felt like I was worth, right? Mm-hmm. And so I started my first business accidentally when I was about 19 years old. I came home from college in the summertime, and I bought this old raggedy car because I was poor. And I bought this old raggedy car for $50, drove it around all summer, and then listed $50? It in the paper and sold it for $350. What's that?
You bought a car for $50 back then?
I bought more cars for $50 and $100 than any other price point in my life. Like, because if you're buying a car for $50 or $100, they don't last very long, right? And I also bought them for, I buy them for $50 or $100 and sell them for $300, $800, $900, $1,200, whatever. So,
was back then, what was the year that you,
what kind of car? So the year that I first did that was 1980. So 1980 was the year that I bought a 1972 Buick Skylark for $50.
$50?
And sold it.
How much a car you could buy? How much mileage was on that car?
I don't even, a lot. Okay. Now, a lot of miles and no hubcaps, right?
How do you buy a car for $50, even if it's like 20, 30? Well,
back then, it was, that's how much you bought. I bought a lot of cars for $50, a lot of cars for $100. If I paid a $500 for a car back then, that was a lot of money. Now I have a Bentley in the garage and I've got a couple of Mercedes in the driveway. So obviously I don't pay $50 for my cars anymore, but I did. And, we all have to come from somewhere, right?
True, yeah.
And so I wasn't even trying to start a business. I just had a car and it wasn't good enough to drive me back to college. So I sold it to a guy who wanted to buy a car. I sold it to him for $350. He got a deal. He got the car for $350. I drove it around all summer, made $300 on it when I sold it, went back to Indiana, bought me another car for $100 or $50 or whatever, and then drove that one around for a while until I sold it. And I saw that that was my first experience in business, buying cars for a smaller price and then selling for a little higher price and learning how to make a profit. And the reason I did that was because I couldn't find a job. There was kind of like a recession, right? So I couldn't find a job, and I was a young man, but I couldn't lift stuff and carry stuff.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't walk with it. So I had to figure out a way to make it work. So yeah. I learned how, I got good at selling stuff.
And that was, how old were you at that time when you were?
That was from the time I was 20 until I was 27. So
7 years you would buy and sell cars.
Buy and sell cars, yep.
Wow. Okay. And then
sell cars. Sometimes I paint them. Sometimes I put an engine in it. Sometimes I put a transmission in it. Sometimes whatever it needed, I would do. And then I would sell it for more than I bought it for, and hopefully have some money left over that was profit. Right.
Wow. And then what did you do with all that money that you made? You got into like speaking and like, how'd you?
That was not even a thought in my head yet. Yeah. In 1987, shortly after I got married, I got started in a business selling insurance and investments. I didn't know it was a network marketing business, but it was a network marketing business, and they sold insurance and investments. The company was called A.L. Williams. And so I got licensed in insurance and I started trying to sell insurance, but I was so terrible at selling. And I'm telling you this so people can be encouraged. Like, I was maybe the worst salesman in the world, in this world history. I was so
like, give us an example. Like, what would, like, how would you, how what's an example of?
Okay, here's an example. I got started selling insurance in October of 1985. Mm-hmm. Right? I did not make my first sale. I said 1987 early, but it was 1985. October of 1985. I did not make my first sale until April of 1987, and I was doing a lot of presentations.
Wow. So like in 2 years.
Horrible. 18 months. It took me 18 months before I made my first sale. Okay. And I remember my first paycheck was $125.66. And I was like, okay, this thing works. I'm going to get rich now.
Yeah,
but I didn't get rich in that business. But what I did, one of the things I learned in that business is one of the most important lessons an entrepreneur will ever learn. And almost nobody will tell you this, but here's what I learned. Here's the most valuable lesson I got out of that experience. It wasn't the money I made selling insurance. It wasn't the money I made selling investments. It wasn't the experience that I got recruiting people and selling and doing presentations. The most valuable lesson that I got from that experience of my life, and I was in that company from October of 1985 until about 1990. Mm-hmm. And the thing that I learned, and eventually I became the top salesperson in our office, but here's what I learned. I learned how to stop working for money. Mm-hmm. I learned how to work for reasons that are greater than making money. Now, when I say that, I'm sure there are people watching this right now thinking, lessons, you work for things that are greater than making money? Like what? Well, I learned to work to build something that would pay me after I was no longer working. That's the first lesson I learned. So I learned to build a system that would pay me. Second thing I learned to work to develop a skill that I didn't have before I started doing the work. And I learned to work to develop relationships with people who could help advance my career, which is way, all three of those are way more valuable than any amount of money somebody can pay you for doing a task.
Sure. Can you repeat that to me again?
So I learned to work to build a system that would pay me long after I finished building it. So it didn't pay me any money while I was building it. Once I got it built, now it pays me from now on.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Then I learned to work to develop a skill that I didn't have before I developed that skill. And that skill now still pays me. I learned how to sell. I learned the skill of selling being so bad at sales. Like, how did you go from like being the worst salesperson in the world, not being able to make a sale for a year and a half, to becoming the top salesperson in your office? And I tell people it was easy. I did so much work. See, I was willing to stay in the activity while I was bad long enough to get good.
Okay.
Most people, when they're not immediately good at something, they quit and go do something else. And then when they're not good at that, they quit and go do something else. When they're not good at that, they quit and go do something else. And so most people are unwilling to be bad long enough to get good. I was willing to stay in the activity while I was bad.
Yeah.
Long enough to get good.
To get good, yeah.
Right? And so I developed the skill. And the last thing was I learned to work to develop relationships with people who eventually could help me advance my career. And so, because what a lot of people who don't know when they're first getting started is the people that they desire attention from and intention from, they don't realize that those people are watching them.
Mm.
And they're watching to see how coachable you are. They're watching to see how hard you will work when what you're working on is not working for you, but it is working on you. And they're willing, they're watching you to see if you're willing to let it work on you while it's not working for you, right? Mm-hmm. And so those are the people who can help advance your career and give you opportunities and introduce you to other people when you demonstrate that you're a person of character, not just a person of talent.
Okay, okay. Character, not just talent. So that you're basically integrity, right?
Like if character and integrity. Character is who you are when nobody's watching.
Yeah.
Character is when you do what you say you're going to do, and you do it the right way, and you do it that way every time you do it. And that's a person of character. A person of character does the things they are supposed to do when they're supposed to do it, the way they're supposed to do it, and they do it that way every time they do it because it's the way I am. It's who I am.
Yeah.
See,
yeah.
People don't realize that what you do speaks to who you are, and it tells people who you are. But more importantly than the fact that it tells people who you are, it tells you who you are.
Sure.
And see, it doesn't matter if the world respects me and I don't respect myself. Right. And it also doesn't matter if I respect myself and the world doesn't respect me. Here's the beautiful thing about truth. Mm-hmm. Like when you're true to who you're calling and who you're supposed to be, truth does not require a consensus. Truth mm-hmm. doesn't require everybody agree with it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I can, if I believe that truth is truth, I can believe it all by myself.
Sure.
And I can stand for it by myself without anybody else standing with me.
So how does someone know that this is the truth? Like, how do they stand that firm? You know, like
today, almost nobody knows what they've heard. Follow your heart. That's the worst advice you can ever give somebody. Follow your heart. Yeah. That's like horrible. Like if there's anything you're going to follow, don't follow your heart. Your heart's the last thing. Oh, just follow your heart and do what you feel. That's dumb as a box of rocks. That's horrible advice.
Yeah,
I'm a person who believes in the scriptures, and the scripture says the heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it? I don't want to follow my heart. I want to follow principles. Why? Because all principles always work the same for everybody.
Sure.
See, the law of gravity is a principle. What goes up must come down. The law of polarity is a principle. For every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. The law of momentum is the law of momentum. I can't change the law of momentum just because I don't like it. An object in motion will continue in motion. It'll pick up speed and velocity until and unless it's acted upon by an outside force. I can't change that. So when I work with principles, principles work for me. When I work against principles, principles work against me.
Sure.
I don't need somebody else to go along with me. When I understand that a principle is a principle is a principle, and I'm working based on that principle, it doesn't matter if the world agrees with me or disagrees with me. I am going to stand on what the principle has already demonstrated is truth.
So what were like some of the first principles that you learned as you were becoming an entrepreneur?
There are so many entrepreneurial principles that are great. I call principles, right? Principles are God's automation. That's what I call principles, right? They're God's automation. He set up these principles, these laws of the universe, right? So that when he said, I'm going to just program into the universe this law that what goes up must come down. So every time somebody drops something, I don't have to say, okay, now you fall. It's just God's automation. The principles do what the principles do, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so one of the principles that is a great principle for entrepreneurs to understand is the law of sowing and reaping. That's the principle of sowing and reaping. You reap what you sow. Mm-hmm. Like, what does a tree have to do to grow apples? It has to be an apple tree, right? So you reap what you sow. That means if you sow an apple seed, you're going to reap apples. You're not going to reap oranges, right? So you reap what you sow. But here's what people don't understand about the law of sowing and reaping. You reap what you sow, but you reap later than you sow, which means when you sow today, that doesn't mean you're going to reap today. Usually you sow in the spring and you reap in the fall. So yes, you reap what you sow, but you also reap later than you sow. See, that's a principle, okay. Right? So when I'm sowing because I trust that what I'm sowing is eventually going to produce fruit that I can harvest. I'm not sowing today, hoping to reap today. I don't take my seed and pour some milk on it and then use it as cereal. I take my seed and I plant it in the ground and then I cultivate it until harvest time. So the law of sowing and reaping. So I reap what I sow.
Yeah.
I reap later than I sow. But here's the real cool part about the law of sowing and reaping. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
You always reap more than you sow, right? So you take one seed and you plant it in the ground. You take one seed, apple seed, plant it in the ground, it grows a whole tree. That tree might produce 100 apples a year once it gets into maturity, right?
Yeah.
And so I like what Warren Wiersbe said. He said, any fool can count the number of seeds in an apple, but only God can count the number of apples in a seed. And mm-hmm. see, I know that when I sow seeds, I don't always know when that seed's going to come back and produce a harvest. I don't know where necessarily it's going to come back and produce a harvest, but I know that it's going to come back and produce a harvest. Here's what's cool about the law of sowing and reaping. You ready? Here it is. Every word is a seed. Every word that comes out of my mouth is a seed. So therefore, I am only going to sow good word seeds. So I'm going to sow words of encouragement. I'm going to sow words of friendship. I'm going to sow words of kindness. I'm going to sow words of truth. I'm not going to sow words of deceit. I'm not going to sow words of anger. I'm not going to sow words, because if I sow those seeds, I'm going to reap those things back as a harvest. So one of the, if it, you know how, if you look in a bowl of water, or you look in a mirror, you smile in the mirror, the mirror smiles back at you. Guess what? If I look at a human being and I smile, they smile back. If I frown, they frown back.
Yeah.
If I push them, they push me.
Yeah, yeah.
Why? Because you reap what you sow. If you're kind, the world, if you sow kindness seeds in the world, the world will you'll reap kindness rewards from the world.
Yeah.
Right? If I sow value to the world, I'm going to reap value from the world. Mm-hmm. And see, most people are so focused on what they want to reap that they don't go out into the marketplace and sow what they deserve to sow, what they have to sow in order to deserve to reap what they desire to reap. So you understand that every word is a seed, but watch this, it gets better. Every thought is a seed. Mm-hmm. So everything that I think mm-hmm. is going to produce a harvest of some kind.
Okay.
So I need to only think things that are productive thoughts and prosperous thoughts and good thoughts and wholesome thoughts and helpful thoughts and valuable thoughts. I don't need to be thinking about how I can take advantage of somebody or how I can get somebody back. Because if those are the seeds of thought that I'm sowing, those are the fruits of the rewards that I'm going to be reaping. And I don't want to reap those rewards.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Watch this. It gets more better. Here we go. Here we go. And then we're going to tie it all together. You ready?
Yeah. Yeah.
Every dollar is a seed. Every dollar is a seed that I'm sowing into the garden of my future. Now, if every word is a seed and every thought is a seed and every dollar is a seed and I only sow good seeds, what kind of harvest am I going to reap?
Good harvest.
Good harvest. Watch this. If every word is a seed, every thought is a seed, every dollar is a seed, and I only sow bad seeds, what kind of harvest am I going to reap?
Bad harvest.
If you find yourself reaping an undesirable harvest today, it's possibly because you sowed some unvaluable seeds yesterday.
True.
For instance, I love to pay people. Mm-hmm. Now, I want you to notice what I just said. I love to pay people. I love to pay my bills.
Okay.
Love to pay people.
Yeah.
Why? Because that attitude is a seed.
Okay.
So if I love to pay the people who serve me,
sure,
and that's a seed, then the people I serve are going to love to pay me.
Yeah. People that you serve are going to, okay. Because
right?
You have that attitude.
Because that's the seed I sow.
Yeah.
I went out to eat lunch this afternoon. My brother met me there and they messed up my brother's hamburger. It had a hair in it. So they didn't charge him for his lunch.
Sure.
Right.
Sure.
But it was my brother and I, it would have probably been $25, but it was $10 and change. Right. Not because I knew I was going to do this. This is what I do every time there's more than one person eating. I gave the waitress a $20 tip on a $10 meal.
Yeah, well.
And I'm sure she'd like, but the meal is only $10. Uh-huh. But if it would have been $25, I'd have given a $20 tip on a $25 meal.
Sure.
And some people say, well, that's a waste of money. Is it? Yeah. Because that is a seed that I sowed, a good seed that I sowed into another human being.
Sure. Yeah.
And by the way, I may not ever reap the harvest back from that same human being, but it doesn't matter. I'm going to reap it back from somewhere.
It's energy. It's just energy.
Right. I love to pay the people who serve me, and the people who pay me, the people who I serve love to pay me. Why? Because it's a seed. I don't, oh man, they're just trying to sell me something. Well, when somebody's trying to sell me something, I'm paying attention to see if it's something I'm trying to buy. Why?
Yeah.
Because it's a seed. My attitude is a seed. My perspective is a seed. My words are a seed. My thought is a seed. So one of the things that I do, like I teach people how to sell high ticket coaching. Mm-hmm. I sell high ticket coaching. I've got a program that's $55,000. That's not crazy expensive, but it's more than a car and less than a house.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I've got a coaching program that's $155,000. And I've got a coaching program that's $1 million.
Yeah.
We sell all of them.
Yeah.
Okay. So, here's why I'm telling you this. one of the most valuable things that I do for my clients, mm-hmm. for my clients, is I charge them a lot of money to work with me.
Sure.
Say, how's that valuable you do for your clients? Here's why. Because one of the things that I discovered in my coaching is people who are unwilling to pay will be unable to charge. So if I don't charge them a lot of money to work with me, they will never be able to charge their clients a lot of money to work with them because they don't even know what it feels like. They don't. If you don't know what it feels like to pay for a high ticket offer,
how could you?
You can't believe that anybody's ever going to pay you for a high ticket offer.
Yeah.
If you resist when somebody's selling you a high ticket offer,
yeah,
then the marketplace is going to resist when you try to sell it a high ticket offer. And not only is the marketplace going to resist, you're going to resist making that high ticket offer because you can't see enough value in yourself to invest in yourself at that level. So you can't see that anybody else would want to invest in themselves through you at that same level.
Because, yeah, because you haven't done that yourself.
Right? Self, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
You cannot teach what you do not know, and you cannot leave where you will not go.
Yeah, awesome. Dang. So you said, yeah, that $1 million, like, coaching product, that's pretty crazy. So that's like teaching people how to sell on stage as well, or it's just a different?
Well, that's a particular coaching program for a particular result. The particular result is to help people get to $10 million a year.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah. And so my objective in my $1 million coaching program is to help them. So it's for somebody who's making $2 million, $3 million, $4 million. They want to get to $10 million. I'm going to show them a system that we've already showed other people that have helped them, like, go from one client, for instance, went from like raking and scraping, being in debt over $1 million in debt, owing the IRS over $250,000, hemorrhaging $30,000 a month. And now they do $1 million a month in revenue.
Dang.
That's they crazy. Do $275,000 a month in revenue before they get out of bed in their MRR, monthly recurring revenue, using systems that I taught them. So, like, for instance, here's how I create my pricing structure. So if I said to you, Ray, I'll sell you this $50 bill for $5. Would you take that deal?
Yeah.
Why? Because $50 is 10 times more than five, right?
Yeah.
What if I said, I'll sell you $500 for $50. Would you take that deal?
Yeah.
What about 5,000 for 500? Would you take that deal?
Yeah.
50,000 for 5,000. Would you take that deal?
50. Yeah. Yeah.
I'll sell you 50,000. You give me 5,000. What if you didn't have 5,000 and you knew I was going to sell you 50,000 for 5,000? What would you do?
Say that one more time.
You didn't have the $5,000 and you knew I was going to sell you 50,000 for 5,000. What would you do?
Find a way to get that.
Right. There would be no excuse. There's nothing stopping you, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Okay. What about if I was going to sell you 500,000 for 50,000? Would you take that deal?
Yeah.
What if you didn't have 50,000?
You would just find a way to be personal or whatnot.
Have you ever heard of a guy named Bill Gates?
Yes.
What's he famous for? He used to be the what?
Wealthiest man.
He's the wealthiest man in the world, right? He's still like one of the top three wealthiest people in the world. He's worth over $100 billion, right?
Yeah.
Did you know that the way Bill Gates became the wealthiest man in the world was through a software program called, are you ready for this? The Down and Dirty Disk Operating System. Have you ever heard of the Down and Dirty Disk Operating System before today?
Down and Dirty Disk Operating System. It's not Microsoft.
That used to be, like, he bought it. That was the name of it, the Down and Dirty Disk Operating System. You know what he changed it to? Microsoft DOS, Microsoft Disk Operating System. He bought the program for $50,000, but he had a challenge. You know what his challenge was? Mm-hmm. What was it? He didn't have $50,000.
Oh, wow.
But he didn't let not having $50,000 stop him from buying the thing that was going to eventually make him the richest person in the world. Why? Yeah. Because his vision for the future of his industry was greater than his vision for the limitation of not having $50,000. So guess what he did? Guess how he came up with the $50,000?
He went asking from friends or I don't know. Or other.
He got a friend, watch this now. He got a friend to give him, not loan him, give him $50,000.
Wow.
In exchange, Bill Gates made the guy an offer. Here's the offer.
Yeah.
You give me $50,000, I'm going to give you a percentage of my company that does not yet exist.
Wow.
Would you give somebody $50,000 for a part of their company that doesn't yet exist?
If I believed in them enough. And
exactly. And his friend believed in Bill Gates enough because of who Bill Gates had already demonstrated himself to be. He gave Bill Gates $50,000. Bill Gates went He bought the disc, Down and Dirty Disc operating system, and he bought it for $50,000 and refused to sell it to anybody, but he agreed to license it to every computer manufacturer in the world. So he leased it to all the computer manufacturers so they could use it on their computers to run their computers. So he bought it and refused to sell it. He would only lease it or license it.
That's smart.
He became the richest man in the world with that license.
Yeah, that's crazy.
For something he didn't even invent. But the reason he became the richest man in the world is because he wasn't afraid to figure out where to get the necessary investment to turn his idea into wealth.
Yeah, yeah. So he wasn't afraid to dream big and go after his goals. And that quantum leap, like U-Squared talks about that too, right? Quantum
leap. Exactly. That was his quantum leap moment.
Yeah.
And everybody has one. Everybody has a quantum leap moment. See, you probably know who Dan Henry is, right? Do you know Dan?
Yeah, I think I've heard,
Okay, so Dan Henry's an entrepreneur. He lives here in St. Pete. Good friend of mine, just a really good friend of mine. But he wasn't always a good friend of mine. He was just a guy who lived in Tampa who had a business, and I live in Tampa and have a business. Mm-hmm. Dan Henry made $10 million before he ever met me.
Yeah.
Right? We had a conversation. I said, Dan, if you ever learn how to sell from the stage, the amount of money you can make is going to be ridiculous.
Yeah.
So Dan bought my $55,000 coaching program.
Sure.
The first time he used what he learned, he did $1 million in sales in one day.
Wow.
The first time he used it. You say, why do I tell you that story? What if he had talked himself, $55,000? What kind of crazy price is that?
Yeah, yeah.
Right? But he didn't do that. He just owned up and said, okay, I'll pay you what you say it's worth. Yeah. And then he did the work. And the first time he used it, he did $1 million in a day. The second time he used it, he did like $300,000 in a day.
That's insane.
That's $1.3 million. And he only used what I taught him twice so far.
Sure.
Then he bought some more coaching from me where I taught him how to turn his money into money. And the money that he's turning into money, that'll make eventually what I taught him about using his money to make money, that money will make him more money than his business does. So it's all about understanding value and what's valuable. And most people value distractions over intentions. People who create wealth value intentions over distractions.
What does that mean? Like value versus distraction, Jeff?
Okay, intention is when you are focused on something that is going to have a measurable impact on the quality of your life. That's called intention.
Intention.
Right? Okay. Focused on an activity that is going to have a measurable impact on the quality of your life.
Okay.
A distraction is when you're focused on an activity that has no measurable impact on the quality of your life whatsoever. For instance, a person is broke, but they're watching football for 4 hours on Saturday or Sunday or both.
Yeah.
And they're getting in arguments with people over their football team, which they don't own and they don't get a paycheck from. And those people who are on that football team don't know that they exist. Football, if you're broke, is a distraction. Why? Because, and what's really fascinating, like I don't watch a lot of professional sports. I watch some golf sometimes because I'm a golfer, and I watch golf to learn how to hit shots. Mm-hmm. Like it's not like I don't sit down and watch golf for 4 hours, and golf tournaments take 6 hours, 4 days in a row. I'm not going to use my time for that.
Yeah.
I'll record all the golf tournaments, and I'll fast forward through all the commercials and all the talking heads, and I'll see the players I want to see hit shots, and I'll watch them hit shots, and I'm done, and I delete it, and then I'm on my way. Why? Because it's a distraction.
Yeah.
Why would I use my intention to focus on a distraction when I could use my intention to focus on intention?
Okay.
Right. And so people watch the news, right? Mm-hmm. And they will get in an argument with you over something they watched in the news. Like, okay, for instance, you got this whole election thing, right?
Yeah.
There are people who will argue with you about Donald Trump or Joe Biden, and they don't know either one of those people, and neither one of those people know them. I guarantee you, Joe Biden and Donald Trump are not arguing about you.
Yeah, of course.
It's a distraction.
Yeah.
It's like getting in an argument about that is a distraction. It adds no value.
Yeah.
Measurable value to the quality of your life, but like people spend hours a day obsessing.
Why do they do that? Why do you think people?
Because we've been programmed by the miseducational misdirectional system, aka government indoctrination camps, child prisons, schools, whatever you want to call them. We've been programmed to focus on distractions and like ignore intention. That's what you think about it. You're working, you're in a class, you're in a math class, right? You're working on math, mathematical equations, which they intentionally call math problems so that you think math is a problem. So you don't want to think about numbers. So when you become an adult, it's easier for the system to take your money. Math is not, there's no such thing as a math problem.
Yeah.
There's mathematical equations, but they call them problems because you want to think, oh man, problem. You go to school, you're like, oh, it's a math problem. And last time you heard the word problem, your mom was using it. I had nothing but problems out of these kids all day. And then you get in trouble with your dad when your dad comes home from work, right? Or your dad comes home late from work. I had nothing but problems out of this car. So you know that the connotation of a problem is negative. Yeah. So you start learning math. You think of it as a problem. You have a mental block about mathematical equations before you ever learn 2 + 2 = 4.
Yeah.
Math is not a problem.
Yeah.
Math is an equation. You're making this side equal that side. It's an equation. It's not a problem. Anyway. Yeah. But you're in math class and you're working on these mathematical equations and you're halfway down the page and the bell rings. What do you do?
Do you leave? I don't know.
You close the book, you put the paper away, and then you go on to the next thing that's just as unimportant as the last thing you did.
Yeah.
So what you're learning by responding to a bell is you're learning that nothing's important and nothing's worth finishing.
Wow. Okay. Subconsciously,
You're subconsciously being programmed that nothing is important except doing, responding to the stimulus that I am providing for you. The bell rang, go do this. The bell rang, go do that. So now when you go get a job and the bell rings, you can go eat lunch. And when the bell rings, you can go to take a break. And when the bell rings, you can go home from work.
It's like Pavlov's dog
experience. It's exactly like Pavlov's dog.
So we're just conditioned not to think for ourselves. We're kind of just to...
Right. Most people don't think, they just think they think.
Yeah, well, so how did you... Well, I know you had your own business, so that's kind of how you thought for yourself, but how would you recommend people who maybe like for those listening, like they probably don't even know like the box that they're living in, right? Or the prison or subconscious things controlling them, right? So
they're living out a program that somebody else programmed them to live out and has nothing to do with anything.
Or their childhood. Yeah. Or their childhood. Yeah.
So what should they do? Read books by people who are producing results that you desire to produce.
Okay.
Find somebody who's producing a result you desire to produce.
Sure.
Hire them, pay them whatever they charge, and let them teach you how to do the thing that they are doing that you desire to do, period.
Sure.
So amazing to me.
Mentors.
Yeah, mentors. It's so amazing to me that people will go to college and spend $40,000 a year to learn something that they'll probably never use.
Yeah.
So they can get a piece of paper to hang on their wall. Yeah. And then when they graduate, they can't even get a job making $40,000 a year to pay off their college loans in less than 25 years. It's the whole thing that we bought into is so insane.
It is. Yeah. Yeah.
But we bought it because that's what they sold to us. And they started selling it to us when we were knee high to a grasshopper. And so now, like, I don't know. I just told everybody, you got to do it. You got to get a degree.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So I'm not saying you shouldn't get a degree. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying if you should get a degree, at least know why you're doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. Not just mindlessly. So for you, you said you were selling cars at 20, right?
Between 19 and 27 years old. Then I got a job driving a trash truck.
Sure.
When I was 25, I started selling insurance and investments. Well, I started selling it, even though I didn't make any sales until I was 27. Right. So I was 26, almost 27. I made my first sale. I made my first sale. Then I became the top salesperson in our office. And then I learned how to sell. And then I got good at selling. And then I got good at recruiting. And then I got good at building businesses. And then people started asking me, hey, Myron, how'd you build that business? And then I started charging them to tell them.
To teach
them. So now I charge people to teach them how to do what I've done.
Okay. Well, so you pretty much, obviously self-made. And, you know, this is not something you learned. Or you learned it on your own, it seems like.
I hired coaches. I read books. I read a lot of books. I've got thousands of books. I've got hundreds of books here in my office. I've got hundreds of books in my other office. I've got hundreds of books all over my house. I got books everywhere because I'm always learning, reading, studying something.
Sure.
Yeah, I get in my car, I'm listening to audiobooks. I spend as little time focusing on distractions as possible, and most of my focus time is on intention. Something I intend to learn, something I intend to use to grow my life, to make my life better so that I can have more value to contribute to my family, more value to contribute to my friends, more value to contribute to the marketplace.
Sure.
When I become more valuable, then I can do things that are more valuable, then I can have more value coming back to me.
Okay. And so are there, well, I know you shared some books with us, like U Squared. Are there like the top three books you would say for people just starting out or just people who just want
My top favorite book by all means, and the one I've been studying since I was 17 years old, is the Bible. That's my top favorite book. It's the book of books. It's great for business. Got more business lessons in it than all the other business books put together. If another business book teaches a principle that is a true business principle, I promise you that principle is in the Bible. So that's first.
Okay.
U Squared is the book you talked about. So you can show them your copy.
U Squared.
That's a great book. It's 36 pages. Mm-hmm. In my high level coaching program, my $155,000 coaching program, I have the people who are in that program read that book every week.
Every week. Okay.
Every week for a year.
For a year? Well.
For a year.
Okay.
So that you can start thinking in terms of quantum leaps. Mm-hmm. Then another book that's really a great, it's like a workbook, and it's like a challenge. It's a 21-day challenge workbook. It's called The Millionaire's Map.
Millionaire's Map, okay.
By Matthew Cross. And basically it teaches you how to apply the Fibonacci sequence to your spending.
Sure.
And you start, you pick an amount of money that you start with on day one, and then you, every day, you have to spend that amount of money, and then you double it and you keep one. It's double really, and it just gives you a prosperity consciousness. What, how would you live your life if you lacked nothing? What would you do?
Yeah.
What would you spend your money on? Well, and so that gets your subconscious mind, because your subconscious mind can't tell the difference between what's real and what's imagined.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
And so what it does is it reprograms your subconscious mind for prosperity instead of poverty.
It's a millionaire's mind, and then
millionaire's map.
Where,
millionaire's
map. Okay, and then U Squared, and then the Bible. So, yeah, I know. And you have a book talking about like biblical principles for success. So, could you kind of share with people?
So I've got a, my book is called From the Trash Man to the Cash Man: How Anyone Can Get Rich Starting from Anywhere.
Yeah.
I have a Facebook group called Bible Success Secrets. And on that Facebook group, I teach biblical principles of business. I've been doing that Bible study now for the last 7 years. I've been recording it in Facebook, I think, for the last 5 years. And I teach very practical lessons on what the Bible says about business and life in general.
Yeah.
And if you want to follow me on Instagram, I am at Myron, M-Y-R-O-N, Golden, G-O-L-D-E-N. And if you want to ask me a question about anything, the fastest way to get a hold of me is on Instagram. And you send me a message on Instagram, and I can answer that question. So Ray, hopefully that was helpful.
Yeah.
I've got to go because I've got to go get some dinner.
Yeah.
hopefully this has been helpful.
Yeah, this has been really good. Yeah, thank you. And I'll be recording, and I'll share with you the recording as well later. And then people can find you at Instagram at Myron Golden, and your website MyronGolden.com. And so
MyronGolden.com also, yeah.
Yeah, also. So okay, yeah. Cool. So thank you.
All right, man. Hopefully this is helpful. Appreciate it, man. Have a great day.
Yeah, you too.